Greetings, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Working Experience, a very warm open arm audio embrace and a squeeze. This episode is brought to you by my company, One Circle Media. One Circle Media is a hybrid digital agency and media content creator. We create and design apps, websites, videos, social media content, and physical products. We are artists, directors, designers, producers, coders, editors, thinkers, makers, and creators who embrace story and creativity from design, web and app development, animation, docs, features, TV shows, digital and social media content to physical products. For our clients, we create content that builds networks and audiences across multiple platforms. Check out our work at onecircledigital.com and onecirclebrand.com. If you work for a network, studio, brand, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks, everyone, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Working Experience.
The Working Experience.
Route 93 North is almost at a standstill. It's a rough one out there this morning. Snow and sleet.
There is no service on
the... Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Yeah, folks. We're going to be a few minutes. We have train traffic ahead of us. We should be moving shortly.
John, we need that report ASAP.
Where are we on that presentation?
Dan, HR wants to see you.
Did you return that email yet?
We have a team meeting at 10.
To stay late, Bob.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
They're moving in a different direction.
And after the meeting, we'll have a breakout session.
Who ate my biscuits?
Where are my hot pockets?
This microwave is disgusting.
Oh, God, what's that
smell? He was dipping his toenails at his desk. I can't take it anymore.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Working Experience Podcast. My guest today is Dawn Pick Benson. Dawn is a travel coach and writer. She has backpacked South America from Peru to Tierra del Fuego, studied in Egypt and Israel, ridden the rails in Europe, and lived in Kosovo for several months. She helps women in major life transition get unstuck and experience transformation through solo travel. Welcome, Dawn.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk with you.
So you can speak from experience about traveling, obviously.
Yep. I think at this point I've been to 48 countries, maybe soon to be 49. I'm going to Morocco in a couple of weeks.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Okay. Well, we'll get into the whys and the wherefores, but could you tell us about yourself, where you're from, your background, your education, that kind of thing?
Sure. I grew up in a tiny town in Indiana. So small, like it had a flashing yellow light, not even a flashing red light. So
okay. Yep.
It was one of those towns. I grew up on a farm, very tiny. Interestingly enough, never traveled. My parents didn't go anywhere. But for some reason, I always dreamed of seeing the world. So I remember being a kid and having one of those old globes, and I would spin it and I'd point to a country, and then I'd go get the Encyclopedia Britannica and I'd go look it up and be like, okay, where is this? What is it? What are the people like? All of that. So I've always been super curious about seeing the world. But because I was in a small town, no one in my family had ever gone to college. So I knew that early on, it's kind of like I sensed my ticket to being able to see the world was education. So I worked hard in school and studied. My undergraduate degrees were in history and international studies. I ended up being the first person in my family to graduate. And then I went on and got my master's degree in mass communication at the University of Georgia. I focused on magazine journalism. So I started out my career as a magazine journalist. Also, during my time in school, I studied abroad in Egypt. So that kind of solidified my interest in travel and my kind of travel bug. And really, it's, I think, fascination with people and cultures and stories. So after I graduated with my master's from UGA, I spent about 10 years in the South working and got married there, all those kind of things. throughout the course of my career, I've been a magazine editor. Then I worked in higher education for quite a few years. I worked as a marketing director, and I taught writing classes also. And then after that, went to an ad agency. So most of my work experience is writing for some kind of an audience, whether it's a magazine or students thinking about going to college, all those things.
Right.
Travel also, I've always kind of looked for ways to incorporate travel into my world, like in higher education. My husband at the time was a professor, and so we would do study abroad trips with students. It worked out really well between the two of us. And so we took students on trips. That's also where I was able to really learn a lot about what causes transformation in travel, because there's tons of research about that specifically to students. You know, also what happens when you come home from a trip that's transformational, how do you take that into your life now? And so I learned a ton about that, learned about cultural intelligence, got trained in that. So my time in higher education, I kind of soaked in lots of knowledge about all kinds of things. And then now I live in Grand Rapids, Michigan, most of the time. In the last couple of years, I've been toying around with the idea of living in Europe for a few months at a time. So most recently, I was in Kosovo in Macedonia for about 7 months. I've been working on a travel memoir about my solo travels in the Balkans. So,
okay. All right. So what that covered. Yeah.
I was like, covered a bunch of territory for you.
Yeah. Well, that's good, because you have literally covered a lot of territory. aside from sort of the entertainment of traveling and so forth, you talk about transformation. So can you talk about that as opposed to, like, you know, just going and seeing different things?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was actually just talking to a friend about that, because she was telling me about a trip that she had gone on, and the person had planned all the sites. She said, I felt like we were literally running from site to site to site, and I was exhausted when I got home. And that's exactly, you know, I think anyone can go on a trip and they can go see a bunch of sites. You can have anyone plan an itinerary for you. But in order for it to really be transformational, I believe it's all about intentionality. It's all about what I do. I specifically work most often with women, and what I often do is have them visualize what is the most extraordinary travel experience you could possibly have, and envision that with all your five senses. And then as you do that, you can notice how you're feeling. Like, you might in that envisioning, you might notice, wow, I felt really brave in that, or it was really vibrant for me, or I felt powerful, or I had adrenaline pumping, you know, whatever it was. Those are telltale signs to, I think, what you're, you know, not to sound too woo-woo, but like your soul, I think people who want to travel, usually their soul, their heart is desiring to feel something. And if you know what, if you can like suss that out, dig that out and know what that is, and then plan your trip around it, I think that's the key to it being transformational. Because, you know, anyone can have someone plan their sites for them, but if I know, like, for example, one of the women in my group, when I had her do this exercise, she painted this picture of herself being at this cafe where she was, like, for the first time in months on her own, not worrying about what her kids were doing or not doing, and she was having coffee and reading a book, and she just felt incredibly peaceful and was surrounded by cobblestone streets and all of that. And so then when we had her think about what those words were, she was like, I want to feel inspired. I want to feel peaceful. I also want to feel confident, because I'm here on my own and I'm sitting here having this meal by myself and I feel amazing about it. Right. And so when you do that, then you kind of think about, okay, that tells you a lot. Okay. Well, where might you go? So when her and I talked about it, she realized, I'm imagining the south of France. That's what I want to be, in a place that seems beautiful and peaceful and ancient and all of these things. And so she chose the south of France. And then we also, when she created her plan for what to do, and even while she was there thinking about it, it causes you to have this filter of like, okay, you know, what is going to bring peace to me on this trip? What is going to feel peaceful? What's going to make me feel confident? You know, so she purposely went on a few, did a few things on her own that made her feel like she was being stretched so that she could feel those things. And in those ways, I think when you go into a trip like that, those are the kind of things that help to transform you, is you really knowing what you need. And then does that make sense? And then planning around, so that you're not planning the kind of trip you don't need. Like, she obviously didn't need to go skydiving, right?
Right.
That wouldn't have been transformational for her. It might've been terrifying. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting you say what she needed, because like I went to Madrid end of June, beginning of July, beautiful city and everything. We went over to I forget what it's called. It's a famous art museum that's mm-hmm. there. And I really didn't want to stand in line and go in, because I liked seeing the city. Like mm-hmm. not I like art and everything. And when I go to New York, I love going to the museums and everything. But I lived there for 20 years, so I don't really, I mean, I also like going around the city, but I'm not really going there to see a piece of abstract art from somewhere else. Like, I want to see Madrid. I want to see the people who live there. So when you say some people might want to go and check off, see the Louvre, see, you know, whatever, the Eiffel Tower, but that might not, obviously wasn't what she needed. She needed a different experience.
Right, right. And there is a difference between just checking things off and actually experiencing it. So, mm-hmm. you know, just allowing yourself to maybe, you know, you're in this space that allows you to have potentially, you know, new ideas come to you, or you're taking yourself out of your normal routine and you're mm-hmm. in this new place. And there could be all kinds of epiphanies that happen just through that alone, if you leave room for it. So I'm obviously a big proponent for just leaving room for stuff, not over planning things and having your itinerary super set. I mean, set it up enough that you're feeling confident about, like, not everyone's comfortable to just show up in a country and not have a plan, but
yeah, there's a happy medium, I would say. Yeah. But, you know, someone said, who had been there before me, all like, oh, you got to go see Toledo. And I was like, you know, maybe on the next trip, but I'm here for a week. I want to be here. Like, I don't want to keep running, mm-hmm. you know, like I want to go to the restaurants where the locals go. And it was great. Other people, you know, that's why it's hard to travel with people. That's why the idea of solo travel very much appeals to me. So what would prompt this person in particular, like, by and large, your clients, like, why are they coming to see you? What prompts them to seek you out and seek your advice out and that kind of thing?
Right. So often it is a woman who is, for the most part, over 40, kind of in that life transition where there's often something going on where something major hasn't happened. So a lot of women come to me who have been recently divorced, and now they're just kind of figuring out, now what? What does my life look like? I'm not sure that I know who I am anymore. I know who that person was, but who is this new person who's coming out of a divorce and wants to remake their life? Often those women may or may not have, you know, traveled with their husband or their ex-husband. And so that's scary, because now they're figuring out, okay, he always did these things when we traveled. Now I have to figure that out. Mm-hmm. And so they often still have a desire, or, you know, think that travel might be the way for them. I always think of it, basically how I think of it is that I help women use travel as a tool for self-discovery and profound transformation. So those women who come to me are often in this place of, I'm feeling stuck, or they're grieving a loss, and they think that travel might help them find some answers. So whether that's finding healing, or whether that's really just kind of finding, not to sound trite, but like finding themselves, because the kind of coaching that I do yes, I help people figure out where to go and what to do. And we talk about safety and all of that, but I focus a lot on self-discovery. And so even before they go, we talk a lot, like we look at their personality style and their strengths. And, you know, I think of those as tools in your backpack so that they really know when they get there, what are my strengths? What am I good at? They've already started the process of getting insight into themselves. And then while they're on that trip, you know, we stay in touch. We still have Zoom calls and stuff like that. And just in ways of challenging them to go deeper, they get a journal that they take with them and questions and prompts. So there's lots of things that are set up for them. I'm probably getting ahead of myself there, but mostly it's women who are in that space of, you know, they might have lost a spouse. They might've been divorced. They might be empty nesters or just recently retired. And just looking at, okay, what does this next phase of my life look like? And I'm kind of nervous about it. I'm not sure how it should look. And I think travel might work, but they don't. They're also a little nervous to do it, to like plan the whole thing themselves. And so they're usually looking for a community or someone to help them figure it out, to troubleshoot and do it. And, you know, often the women in my group are, they're looking for a community as well, because I do group coaching. So they're there cheering one another on in their trip and helping each other. And they kind of become this little travel community.
So do you see yourself as like part therapist, part planner, part counselor, networking? It all sounds like it combines a lot of those skills.
Yeah. I mean, definitely not a therapist. I don't have those credentials, but maybe a little more life coaching kinds of things, but probably pulling in my tools from all that time in higher ed and working and mentoring with students and learning a lot about personality styles and different tests and all kinds of things. And kind of combining a lot of my past experience and history into creating this coaching package. So I would say part kind of travel advisor, part cheerleader or coach. You said another word that
made sense. Networking. I mean, you said you have a group, like kind of people advise each other on traveling to different places.
Yeah. Well, the women, partly the networking would be, I know a lot of people in a lot of different countries and do a lot of different have a lot of expertise in travel. So sometimes, you know, for example, if I know a woman who really focuses a lot on traveling and doing it as cheap as possible. So if I have a woman in my group who's really looking for budget tips and trying to figure out how to maximize her points or something like that, this is my go-to person that I say, you should really talk to her, because I know a decent amount, but I don't focus on it all the time. It's not the thing I think about all the time. This other woman is always looking for like hacks and things like that. But for amidst the group, it's often like, for example, I'll just give you an example of two women in my group right now. There's Jackie and Robin. And when Jackie's going to Greece actually on Monday, and she's an artist. And so when Robin and I, at different points in time, we've been paying attention for, you know, 6 months-ish now of what's going on in Greece. And so Robin found this woman who is an artisan in Greece, who does this Facebook page, who does some really cool stuff. And so then Jackie was able to kind of look that up and connect with this woman and see what she does. So it's almost like they know what each other is, where they're going and what they're wanting to do. And so they're masterminding with one another, which is something that I probably should have anticipated when I started the group, but I didn't anticipate how excited they were about all of it. They're all sending each other stuff and they're helping one another and saying, hey, I found this about France. What about this? And so they're, you know, it goes beyond what even I'm offering, because they're finding stuff too while they're out looking at and planning their own trips.
And that you had mentioned safety before. Do people give each other tips and all? Because I mean, traveling alone to a country, especially if you don't speak the language. I mean, I've done it a few times, and it's always been fine. But like in Brazil, very few people spoke English, and once or twice I started to feel a little uneasy because I thought something was going on, and I didn't know what it was, and I'm sort of looking around like, should I be getting out of here now or something? Like, I don't really know. I mean, do you focus on those things as well? Like, hey, you're traveling to this country, be careful of this or whatever.
Yeah, we do. We do talk about safety. At first, it's safety in general. Just, I think there are some general things that women need to be aware of and pay attention to, and or anyone really. But and a lot of times, especially I notice with women, we're sometimes used to, we often tend to sometimes ignore our intuition or think we might be a little bit crazy or worrying too much. Mm-hmm. And I think especially when you're traveling alone, you pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. And so just even me talking early on about that so that they get used to it and they start doing it before they go, because they start thinking about how their intuition is working. Right. It's really interesting how it works for them. But I do talk about safety. And then when I know where they're going, if I know that there are things to pay attention to, I'll make sure that they know that. If I know someone is a newbie to travel, there are just certain places I might, you know, steer them away from or say, right, hey, this area of the world might be your best bet to put your first foot forward. I also find that technology is a huge thing, and scary for a lot of them, but it also is a great way for you to kind of feel safe. If you're really comfortable with the technology you have, and you know, I have my phone, I can get a hold of people this way, and you know exactly how to do it. So you're not showing up and you're confused about how you even contact someone in an emergency and sort of have some of those things already planned and prepared. That really takes down your anxiety as well. But yeah, there's definitely a section when I do the group coaching experience, it goes in phases. There's phase one, phase two, phase three. Phase two is all about the nuts and bolts of like planning your trip. And that includes safety. There's a whole session on safety, and then there's one on tech and communications and, you know, buying your tickets and all of that. I kind of, depending on the group and how much they've traveled or not traveled, I alter it a little bit based on the group.
Yeah. I mean, I just remember like in Prague, they said, do not ever get into a cab on the street. You can walk into a restaurant, even if you didn't eat there, and just ask them to call you a cab or go into a hotel. And I thought, I never would have really known that because I don't speak any Czech. I had no idea what was going on. But, you know, it's like things like that, like when we went to Madrid, the woman at the airport said only cabs with the red stripe on them. Good. So now I know that. How do people find you? Because I didn't even know this type of thing existed.
It's funny. I didn't know until a couple of years ago. So even the story of how I figured it out is funny. But
yeah, how did you come to form the group and all that?
Yeah, I've always been, you can probably tell in our conversation, I've always been looking for ways to incorporate travel into my world. You know, ideally, I always wanted a job in which I could travel all over the place, and it didn't always work exactly out that way. But like I said, I've been a writer for years. And so there came a point, I would say about 5 years ago, that I started to feel like, I don't know if I love this job anymore. And so I was really wanting to make, I just felt like I wanted to make more of a direct impact on people. Yes, when you write, like have often written a lot for like organic foods and things like that, where you feel like, okay, maybe I'm doing something important and good, but I really wanted more directly impact. Like I was thinking more about when I was in higher ed and my time with students, and that really fired me up and got me excited to see how they grew. And so I started to think more about my own. I did my own self-discovery kind of mining of, you know, got into my own therapy, got into like learning more about myself and figuring out. And then I just kind of started looking for possibilities. Like, what could I do? What do I want to do? And that's when I went on a trip to Kosovo for 3 months. I was married at the time and also not sure if that realizing that was not a healthy situation for me. And so I decided I'm going to go away for 3 months. You know, I can work remote at that point. I could work remotely. So I said, I'm going to go to Kosovo for 3 months and I just need to get perspective. I need to get out from my everyday world and everyone telling me what to do. And I need to listen to like myself. What do I actually want? And that trip was profound for me. I don't even know if I have great words for it other than I was profoundly changed by it and learned a ton about myself and came back and people even remarked on it. Like, you just even look different. And I had just really gotten more in touch with my desire or my various desires and was working through being afraid of it. Anytime you take a step to leave. So, you know, I was like, I don't know. I'm going to stop writing and become a travel coach. And that seems crazy. Or actually at the time, I didn't even know a travel coach was a thing. I was just thinking about maybe I could be some kind of coach. So then I started interviewing women. I decided to interview a lot of women at a crossroads in life. Cause I decided I had felt like that, is interesting to me. So I started interviewing different women who I knew were in that phase and just started asking them questions. And kind of came away from those conversations of like, I'm really not sure I want to be a life coach. I don't know if I want to be a career coach. Like, I'm just not sure that this is landing for me. And I had a friend who I talked to on the phone one time, and she said, she was like, what if you taught women how to do what you just did in Kosovo? What if you did that? And I was like, and I remember just saying, that is not even like, that's not a job. Who's going to pay me to do
that? Right.
And she said, she goes, no, wait a minute though. I know a woman who she's a friend of mine. She's the mother of a friend of mine. And she said she recently got divorced and she's been married, was married for like 42 years. And she said, she really wants to travel, but she's kind of nervous about it because she's been, was married so long and now she's going to go on her own. And she just kind of needs a boost to figure out what's her next steps. And she's like, you need to talk to her. Because I think that there are actually people out there like this. And so I said, okay, send me her information. But then, you know, like a few months go by. And then I also have this morning practice of meditation. And one morning in the middle of it, I have this phrase that pops into my head. And I even remember, like, I don't remember what the phrase was, but I remember it was kind of long and strange. And I thought, and I just kind of laughed at it where I thought, well, okay, I'll put that in my phone. So I put it in my phone and out pops in Google. It said, travel coach, travel coach, travel coach. And I remember, can I swear on your podcast?
Sure.
I remember looking at it going, holy shit, that's a job. and so then I just started clicking on it and seeing, and then I was also looking at a little askance of like, is this just a bunch of people who just are saying they're helping you? I mean, is this really a thing?
Right.
But as I looked at it, I started to see like, okay, I could have a really unique niche here because I am older than a lot of them. I've had more life experience. I have a ton of I've got all kinds of credentials when it comes to traveling and experience and all of that. And then I've had my own life change. And so I just allowed myself to start thinking about, okay, well, what might it look like if I did this? Could I actually find people who would be interested in it? So then I called Robin, who's the woman I was just saying that my friend had mentioned. And I set up a phone conversation with her. We ended up talking for more than an hour and she was telling me all about what was going on with her and all kinds of things. And then at the end, I finally just kind of said, if I were to create a program, to help you go, you know, to go on a trip. Would you be interested? And she was like, absolutely. But she also said something interesting to me, which is sort of how I ended up with the group program idea. Is she said, yes, but I want it to be a group because I want to have a community with other women. And when I had interviewed those women previously about who were in a life change, almost every one of them said the same thing, is I'd be interested in some kind of coaching thing, but I would really like a community because I feel like I'm alone in all of this. I feel like I'm having this, you know, really difficult experience in my life and not everyone understands it. And if I could be part of a group that would understand what life transition, how hard that can be and scary, they were like, I would love that. They're like, yeah, I like coaching too, but I would love it to be more of a group, especially if it was a smaller group and we could get to know one another. So
that seems like the therapeutic part of it, you know, talking with other, not just about travel, but why you're traveling and what you're trying to, you know, maybe change about your life. And yeah, it's amazing how there's a need and a desire out there that nobody really taps into. And I have to say, I like travel coach much better than life coach, because life coach is like, yeah, I can tell you anything. Travel coach is like, I'm going to show you this and this specific thing to do, rather than life coach, which is get out of bed in the morning and, you know, turn your
life around. Exactly. It's how I became more comfortable with, I thought, you know what? Weirdly, all of my experience kind of ladders up to this. And then I also did later find out there, you know, there's a travel coach network and that offers a certification that's ICF certified. And so I started looking into that. So, you know, eventually I learned some more things and got some more connections. And so there is kind of this growing group of travel coaches, but,
It seems very valuable because it's something specific that you can do. Like, you're going, and, you know, I'm not saying it changes everybody's life or whatever, but I like things that are specific, like do this. I'm just remembering a guy I know, a friend, acquaintance. This is probably about 20 years ago, 15 years ago. His wife left. Like, he came home from a job. She was gone.
And oh, wow.
Yeah. And he did not. He's a great guy. And he did not see this coming. And when he called, trying to get in touch with her, she would not return. I mean, nothing. There was no anything about abuse or anything like that. She just didn't want to be married to him anymore. And that's what her mother said to him. She said, so-and-so made a big mistake marrying you. And it was like, he was crushed. He was absolutely crushed. I saw him at a wedding and I didn't know this had happened. And I had met the woman and she was very nice. And I said, oh, where's so-and-so? And like, I didn't know. And he just kind of walked away. And then someone told me, I was like, oh my God. Then I saw him about 6 months later. He had taken a trip to Spain for like a month. And he was so much better. Like, he just said, man, I guess his sister had really pushed him to do it. And he did it. And he said, you know, I mean, it wasn't like it healed all wounds, but he was a lot better after that trip.
Yeah. And I'm real careful about that too, because it's not magic. It doesn't fix anything. I know there's millions of women who read Eat, Pray, Love or watched the movie and thought they were going to follow whatever she did. Yeah, and they were going to come home magically with a new man and a new life.
Right.
And you know, there's one thing I have to say about that is you can't copy someone else's trip. That's why I talk about, how do you want to feel? What do you need on a trip? Mm-hmm. Because you can't just follow Liz Gilbert's Eat, Pray, Love trip. Right. But it also, you don't come home magically. You know, my various trips overseas, you know, I went on a different 3-month trip after I got divorced. And I went through a lot of grief on that trip, but it was really good for me and it was transformative, but I didn't come home fixed with for everything. But it will, you know, if you're intentional and plan it there, you know, there's always you know, the things that are bubbling up that we need to work through, getting away and getting some perspective and allowing yourself some time to do it. You know, like this guy probably did, it just got away a little bit, see the world differently, realize that there's still a lot of great, you know, also there are still some amazing things in the world and in life. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you can come home and integrate that some of those things into your life now.
Well, and it's proactive, you know, it's something you can do. Mm-hmm. At least, and there's sort of a before and an after. So when people come home, do you kind of do an unpacking with them about what they experienced and so forth?
Yes. Because actually that, I think that is the most important part, which sounds a little bit weird. And most people don't think about it. They often think about the trip and the planning of it. And then they're not thinking so much about what it's like to come home. But it's often really difficult to come home because you come home and you feel like you're a different person, but not everyone around you has experienced that. They don't know. And then you're also trying to figure out, how do I incorporate whatever it is that I learned or how I felt there? Like, can I somehow bring that into my life here now? How do I do that? So yeah, like the program that I run is called Brave Journey. And how I said it was three phases. So the first phase is kind of a map. Imagining the trip and doing some of the self-discovery pieces of getting an idea of what kind of trip you need and want. The phase two is the nuts and bolts that we talked about. And then the third phase is the return. So, you know, I have a couple of phone calls with them, depending on how long someone's gone. It could be one, two, you know, and what's going on with them. Sometimes they call to troubleshoot. Sometimes it's just to call and celebrate something cool they did. It could be a lot of different things. But then they return and we talk about that and integration of what you've learned and ways that you can kind of integrate some of those things into your life and also deal with the anxiety that comes. Cause some people come home and they, and I don't want to say that to sound like to make anyone afraid to go on a trip, but sometimes, especially if you're gone a little bit longer, sometimes you come back and you feel a little wonky. So it's great to have a community. I came back from 7 months this year and it was really difficult. I was surprised and I'm used to it. But this time I thought, wow. But I also know from working in higher ed, research shows when students are going on a study abroad trip, the most important part and the part that leads to the most transformation is them having debriefing at the end and talking about what they learned and really kind of pulling it apart and integrating it into who they are and what their life is now. Often if they don't do that at all, there's much less transformation. And so I knew that kind of from the research before, but I also kind of know it from my own experience that it's super important. So it's included in the process.
I did a semester in Australia when I was in college.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it was really coming back. I spent a week in Fiji when I came back, and that really stands out to me. It was because it was a layover. You had to choose a layover before you went. Mm-hmm. And that was really intriguing. But when people come back and you debrief, I'm sure everybody has their own story, but are there certain takeaways that stand out to you when you talk to somebody who's been abroad for a month or 3 months or just taken their trip when they come back? Like what kind of transformations or perspectives do they have?
Wow. It's so interesting to me that it runs the gamut. You'd, mm-hmm. you'd think that maybe you could put them in buckets.
Right. Yeah.
People are so different. So sometimes their epiphanies are just around how big the world is and the culture and how they experienced this other culture that was so beautiful and they didn't know anything about it, or they're often comparing it to the US versus, you know, what it's like here versus there. And sometimes that's a favorable comparison, and sometimes they're frustrated. They come home and they're like, why do we have 75 kinds of cereal? Who needs all that cereal? You know,
right, yeah,
like
yeah,
there's 12 peanut butters. And
right. I know. You need two, maybe three. That's it.
Right. And so some of it just has to do with that. And then a lot of, and you're talking like what's hard for them when they return or what they've learned. I want to make sure I'm answering your question.
Either or, like they come back and say like, geez, I used to think this, or I used to feel this way, and I've traveled and I've realized, wow, I didn't, like I drove across country after college out to Colorado a couple of times back and forth. That was a real eye opener because I'd traveled to Europe. And as I say, I'd been to Australia and whatnot, but I'd never been through South Dakota. I'd never been through Wisconsin. And it was a real eye opener to, because I was born and raised on the East Coast. I grew up outside Boston. I went to school in New York City. But you realize people in South Dakota think very differently than someone growing up in New York City. Like it seems absurd to grow up in a place with 10 million people packed onto an island living in these, you know, high rise, literally on top of each other. And they're going to have different concerns. They're going to have different, I hesitate to say values, but like, you know, if you talk about like urban poverty, they're like, well, I have my own struggles out here. So I guess that's what I took away is like, hey, not everybody thinks like you do. Not everybody has the same concerns or priorities. So I guess it's that sort of thing. Like, do they come back and they're like, you know, I used to be really worried about this and I realized I don't really need to worry about that anymore.
Yeah. You know, like the woman that I mentioned earlier, Robin, the original brave journeyer, she came back and she was like, I forget what we were talking about, but she was facing something at home that was difficult. And she all of a sudden stopped and she went, you know what? I went to France alone. I can do anything.
Yeah.
and even her friends, she has this group of friends and they're like, I can't believe that. They just can't believe that she went to France by herself. Yeah. And that really makes her feel good. Cause she's like, wow, they even think what I did was really brave. And she's like, I don't really think it was that brave, but she's like, yeah, I did that. I did that by myself. And so now I can figure out almost anything. And that's an interesting perspective. I think it just depends on the what, like some of them are the way that they feel empowered. I also know that, you know, for my own self, when I have, like, especially when I went to Kosovo, which is a different, you know, different religion, all kinds of things, and also experienced a war. And so, you know, I have come home from there before just, you know, realizing, and they also still, most Kosovars, they have to get a visa to go almost anywhere, except for there's three or four countries they can easily go to, but otherwise it's very expensive, not super easy for them to get around, even in Europe. And, you know, I come back and I think, wow, I can just, I'm a travel coach. I can just get on a plane and go most places. And they're having to go through this process of it being really difficult to even get, you know, to Germany or something, because they have to go and be interviewed and they have to do all this detailed process and things like that really kind of open your eyes to what we have, you know, what you might have in your own life. So I don't know, it'd be interesting when Jackie and my group is going to Crete on Monday. It'll be interesting what she has to say, because she's actually staying with a friend of a friend there. So she's going to be interacting with locals in a pretty intense way. And I'll be curious what she learns about the culture there and what she comes away with. So I think it can vary between what people say and what they experience, whether they're noticing the culture or they're noticing how they're different when they come back.
One thing I do remember in Australia is people are really fascinated by American culture, which I had not, like, they love the NBA. And I could care less about professional basketball. I don't care about professional sports. And like, do you know Michael Jordan? I'm like, well, we don't text much anymore, but I'm like, yeah, I know who he is. And it's a fascination that way, but then it could turn to like, you are the representative of America and you guys raised the price of beef imports. And I'm like, well, I wasn't part of that decision-making process. And you realize how dominant like American culture is around the world. Like they were showing Seinfeld on TV and Oprah and shows like that. And I'm like, I watch Seinfeld, but I'm like, I don't watch these other shows. I mean, they're ridiculous. And I don't know.
You're right. It is interesting. It's eye-opening when you're in places, especially places that have been largely dominated. I mean, Kosovo is very, like, the first time I went there, people would stop me and say, are you an American? And yes, you know, or they'd hear me say something and they'd say, thank you so much. You saved us during the war. Thank you. We love Bill Clinton.
No problem. You
know, I just felt so awkward because I knew the war was happening, but I had nothing to do with it all. And they're inviting me to dinner because I'm an American and helped save them. And I, you know, like it was a great, you know, some great cultural experiences for me, but it also has always felt a little bit awkward because I didn't do anything. Like I'm not the one who did anything,
right.
But they're so familiar with it and very thankful. And I guess that's, you know, that's their way of being grateful. And you know, I just try to roll with it, but there's times where I feel, you know, very awkward about how you might be treated differently. And I know it depends on which country you're going to, because some places love Americans and some people are not so keen.
The relationship is a little more nuanced. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say we were on a bus one time. This guy, you know, I mean, you wouldn't really, well, they kind of know you're American because of the way you dress, but it's not like you stand out that much until people would hear us talking. Myself and the other two guys I lived with, and this older guy started talking, and then he got around to, you know, what's wrong with America. And I'm not a big patriot booster, I don't care, but he said something, I don't know what it was, and I said, where did you go in America? And he goes, oh, I haven't been there. Like, oh, okay. Like I would not go to Australia and say, you know what's wrong with your prime minister? Like I don't know anything about Australian politics. It's their deal. But you'd kind of get around to that. And I'm sort of like, I get it. I understand what you're saying. I know. And it's not that I disagree with you. It's just, I'm not here as a representative of America. So it was always kind of funny when things like that would crop up, but rarely. People were generally fine. You know,
yeah.
They love to talk. One guy thought Rush Limbaugh was a congressman. He kept asking me about the I'm like, he's not a congressman. Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, I guess he'd been named an honorary congressman or something. I was like, I don't follow Rush Limbaugh's career. I don't really know, but it's funny, those little things.
It's very interesting, yeah. And some of those things are partly why part of the course that I do too, I talk about cultural intelligence some with them, because depending on where you're going, if you can learn how people interact with one another and good ways to get out of awkward conversations, mm-hmm. Or ways to, you know, just understanding how they're used to interacting with one another, so that you know if you can be really blunt or maybe you just have to say things in a roundabout way. So there's different, there are different cultural values that different regions of the world have. I don't want to bore you with all of that, but usually when I know where they're going, we'll talk about their region and what are the values in that region, because the communication might be different, personal space, all of those things, so that you understand what's normal. And I also think that that goes to your safety question sometimes too, because if you understand it's normal for people to stand real close to you, mm-hmm. you're not as worried as if you know it is not supposed to be happening and there is a man awfully close to you. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so there are different things like that, but it does, for me, I know, and for them as well, when you know some of the norms of how people communicate, it does kind of help you steer clear of some of the awkward things, or at least figure out how to get out of it, or even not to step into it, or for you to do it yourself, because Americans can tend to, you know, say crazy things to people that are not appropriate, depending on which country you're in, or just even understanding time.
Like, yeah.
You know, yeah. Being lots of, when I travel, I see lots of Americans are frustrated with, like, it started 5 minutes late or whatever it is. And a lot of cultures that is just not, that's not high on their priority. And it's not, we often want to translate you're late to you're being disrespectful, but right. In a lot of cultures, it's the opposite. Like when I'm in Eastern Europe, if you're walking down the street and you're going on your way to a meeting, for work, and you run into a friend on the street and the friend stops you and you start talking and they say, "Hey, do you want a coffee?" It is completely acceptable and normal to say, "Sure, yeah." And you sit down and you have a coffee with that friend, and you might have a coffee for an hour, then you're going to be late for the meeting or completely miss the meeting. And all you have to do is say, "Well, I just ran into so-and-so, you know, on the street, and we had a coffee," and they're like, "Oh, okay." Because they're prioritizing, and this used to annoy me, because I was like, how come everyone's always late? But they're prioritizing relationships, and yeah. Relationships are important. And so when you say, "I ran into a friend and they asked me to coffee," you are supposed to sit down and have coffee. You know, mm-hmm. You don't say, "Sorry, I can't have coffee right now. How about tomorrow?" Because that's not how it works. And so it's interesting. So it often explains why some people are late, or things happen differently, or they need to get rescheduled because they ran into, you know, Uncle so-and-so who asked him to sit down.
I'm trying to imagine a stockbroker working for Morgan Stanley in New York City doing that. Like, "Well, I ran into Joe from college and we had a coffee." I mean, you would be fired immediately. Like, that is, that does not translate. That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I had a lot of trouble when I first went, and I was, because usually I'm working while I'm overseas, so I'm still having client meetings and stuff. But I would have people call, locals call me and say, "Hey, Don, would you like to have a coffee?" And I would say, "Sure, when?" Well, right now. And I was like, "Oh, okay." So it's no, you know, it's not like, "Let's get out our calendars and plan 2 weeks from now." So then I'd have to hurry up and look and go, "Okay, do I have any meetings?" And then you're navigating like the American clients who are not going to really understand that you had to go have coffee.
Yeah.
So.
Well, travel tips like that are invaluable, because to someone like me, who I think I'm generally seen as fairly laid back, even when I go to places like Colorado, it's sort of like, "Well, come on, we said we were going to go." And, you know, it's like, "Yeah, let me call so-and-so." And I start to get like, "Would you guys get it together? Like, come on." And so if I was in Kosovo, it'd be even more pronounced as to like, "We're supposed to start this an hour ago. Like, where are you guys? What's going on here?"
Absolutely. I think the key in it is just understanding that they're not in their culture, they're not disrespecting you, that you're in their culture now. So you kind of have to, you know, I'm not going to say that it doesn't annoy me sometimes. Sometimes I'm like, "I got things to do."
Yeah. I got things to do.
But yeah.
Well, that's why we try. I would say that's why. I mean, I loved in Madrid, you could get a beer at Taco Bell. Like, you know, it's just like, wow. And they serve coffee in McDonald's, because that was the only thing that was open at 6 a.m. in actual glass porcelain coffee cups. I'm like, how civilized is this? You know,
isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I don't mean to keep talking about Kosovo, but it's just because I was just there. But yeah. They actually don't. That might have changed after COVID. I think I might have saw one or two. They do not give you coffee to take away. Like, you get it in a mug and
civilized.
You have it in the restaurant. There is not takeaway coffee. No. There's no Starbucks in the entire country. And they look at you like you're nuts if you think that you're going to walk through town with a coffee in your hand.
No.
Like, you could be sitting down and enjoying your coffee with your friend, even if you're late to work. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. This is America thinks it invented mindfulness. This has it's just called being normal and civilized. You don't have to drink a gallon of coffee from Dunkin' Donuts in your car. You can sit down and chat, talk, and or just sit by yourself and enjoy yourself.
Yeah. This is something that I had to do, like, and as an example of returning. When I was in Kosovo for that long period of time, it stressed me out at first, all this not planning stuff. But within a couple of months, I realized, wow, I am the least stressed if I have ever been in my life. I feel like a different person. And this is why. It's because everyone's just more relaxed and they're not all like running everywhere. And so my challenge when I came home was, okay, I feel so much better like that. And I know I can't just up and import that culture here. So what can I do when I come home to find elements of that? Like, how can I create some boundaries in my own life so that I don't come back home and immediately running around like a chicken with my head cut off? Like, am I willing to create some of my own boundaries in order to experience more of that, or less of that stress? I knew that I couldn't completely fix it, but I did come home and I became more strict about when do I work and when do I not. And when it's summer in Michigan, I decided I'm prioritizing going to the lake when it's beautiful, if I can, you know, instead of saying, I gotta work, I can't do any of these things. Like, there are ways to incorporate it into your life. It can't be perfect, but, you know, for me, there were ways that I just decided I needed to prioritize people over me being productive constantly. And that was just a choice for me. But after I realized how much better I felt internally living like that, I decided it was worth it, even if it meant maybe I got less done in a day.
And I think that's an excellent wrap up to our conversation. That was really excellent. Yeah. Prioritizing. Well, Don Pick Benson, travel coach and traveler. Thank you so much for being on and sharing all these wonderful tips.
Yeah. I really enjoyed talking to you. Thanks so much.
You as well.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Working Experience. We'd like to thank our sponsors, One Circle Media. If you work for a studio, network, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain your audience, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I would love to hear from you. And that's it. The end. The sweet end. Until our next audio encounter.